Good afternoon. Welcome to the Universal Instructional Design Podcast. My name is Beth Hill, and I am Program Director for Teaching Enhancement at the Reinert Center for Teaching Excellence. In today's podcast, I'm talking with Carol Beckel, faculty member of the Department of Physical Therapy and Athletic Training at St. Louis University, and Dr. Karen Myers, faculty member of the Department of Leadership and Higher Education at St. Louis University. And today we will be talking, as I said, about universal instructional design. Before we start, though, would you each tell me a little bit about how you came to be involved with universal instructional design? I will start with Carol and follow with Dr. Myers.
I first learned about universal instructional design through my graduate coursework, in particular a course I took from Dr. Myers. I'm particularly interested in it as a physical therapist because it really is a great alternative opportunity for accessibility beyond what we consider from the medical field.
And Dr. Myers?
I've worked in the field of disability and higher education for over 20 years, and in that time we mostly focused on students with disabilities and providing accommodations. And then several years ago, I started working with Dr. Jean Higby out of the University of Minnesota, who has done a lot of work on universal instructional design, has written lots of articles and several books. And so I started doing research and doing some writing and collaborative work with her, and learned about universal design, and then I began applying it to my classes and to my other work, also through modeling and teaching of universal design.
Carol, what is universal instructional design, or UID, as we will refer to it during the rest of this podcast?
UID is really an instructional methodology in which information is presented in alternative forms to make it accessible and applicable to students with different backgrounds, learning styles, abilities, and disabilities.
Dr. Myers, what is the background of the theory behind UID, and where did it come from?
Well, UID originally began as an architectural term. In the 1960s, architects were using it for barrier-free design, what they called universal design. And an example of universal design is a curb cut. It is made for people not only with disabilities, but all people can use a curb cut for accessing strollers and carts and anything with wheels, and we all use them. So that was how it originally began, and then it was a design of products and environments to be usable by all people to the greatest extent possible. And then universal design later was moved into education and became universal instructional design.
How is universal design applied to higher education?
Primarily, it's used to create inclusive, flexible, and customizable courses, programs, and environments.
Thank you. And Karen, how is UID useful to higher education?
We're using universal instructional design as a model for equitable access, a model for diversity and multicultural education, as well as a model for social justice.
Thank you. Carol, what are some pragmatic ways to use universal instructional design in the classroom?
UID can be very practically incorporated into the classroom. There are 7 principles for the application of UID within a classroom setting. And these principles are based on an article originally written by Chickering and Gamson.
Thanks, Carol. And to the audience, there is a copy of the 7 principles that Carol just mentioned on the CTE website, which is cte.slu.edu, and go to the Teaching Enhancement link and you will find a link to the Universal Instructional Design Checklist. During this podcast, we will now go over the 7 principles, and I will ask each one of the speakers today to identify the principle and to give us an example of that principle. We'll start with Dr. Myers.
The first principle is creating a welcoming, respectful learning environment. This can be done by something as simple as sending a welcoming email to students prior to the start of class. You can also include a syllabus statement that fosters an inclusive learning environment. It could be anything from learning students' names to letting students know that their voices will be heard and encouraging questions and participation.
The second principle addresses essential course components. And this would include the creation of a framework for your students on how the material in the particular course will evolve so they can see a long-term plan. It's also helpful to place your particular course in a context for students so they can better link the material they will learn with future courses.
The third principle is communicating clear expectations and providing constructive feedback. You can do this by using user-friendly syllabi online, doing an online video of the instructor explaining his or her teaching styles, providing grading rubrics for the students online, and providing those rubrics in a timely manner with constructive feedback. Also, you can encourage feedback from students by asking the students to provide evaluations for team members, and then asking for feedback from students after each class by a one-minute paper, or asking them when they were most engaged or least engaged during your class time.
The fourth principle looks at the provision of natural supports for learning to enhance the opportunities for all the students. It's helpful to students if they have other resources to them in the class, such as material posted on Blackboard for reference or learning communities within the class. Also, let students know how and when they can best access you for assistance. This doesn't mean you should be checking your email 24 hours a day, but let students know when they can expect responses from you and when you are accessible within your office. It's also helpful to consider the accessibility of reading material or off-site locations if you're taking field trips, so that all students are able to participate in all of the course activities.
The fifth principle is using teaching methods that consider diverse learning styles, abilities, ways of knowing, and previous experience and background knowledge. By using a constructivist approach to teaching, you can provide information by having students construct meaning from new information based on prior knowledge and experiences. You can also use multimodal teaching techniques such as lecture in large groups, small groups, speakers, etc. Using open caption videos, DVDs, and video streams, and considering the learning styles of your current students and using appropriate teaching strategies.
The sixth principle is offering multiple ways for students to demonstrate their knowledge within a course. We all have strengths and areas to improve, so allowing students a variety of opportunities to demonstrate their knowledge, such as a mix of exams, presentations, online discussions, and group projects, can be helpful. This does not minimize the importance of students developing skills in other areas they are not as strong in, but it does help them to balance their opportunities.
The final principle is promoting interaction among students and between you and the students. This can be done by just being available to your students, encouraging conversation and via email, phone, etc., and encourage students to develop peer learning communities so that they can communicate with one another.
Thank you for defining and giving examples of the seven principles. And now I would like for you two to talk a little bit about the challenges and the benefits for faculty and students. We'll start with Carol and the challenges for faculty and students.
For faculty, they need to understand that to incorporate the UID principles for the first time in a class can be time-consuming up front, as it really does require some planning to be effective. It also requires faculty to have an awareness of resources such as technology on campus that is available to them. Assistance from an administrative staff member can really help in the pre-planning. This can help to identify the resources available in a particular classroom and also software programs that may help as instructional tools. The challenges for students may be that they're in a very different type of learning environment. You may really be challenging them to demonstrate their knowledge in new and creative ways, and they may not be as familiar with them.
Thank you. And Karen, what are some of the benefits of using universal instructional design for faculty and for students?
Well, the benefits definitely outweigh the challenges. And the bottom line is that providing universal instructional design is not only helpful to students, it provides equal access, but it is actually easy for the faculty as well. It's cost effective, it's time efficient, It enhances student engagement in learning, and it reduces the need for last-minute modifications to accommodate students with a variety of needs. It's also beneficial for the students. It eliminates the need to be segregated for specific accommodations. It addresses the stigma associated with the medical model, where disability is a deficiency. And it recognizes individual differences among all learners, including differences in preferred learning styles. And it also enables students to demonstrate knowledge in multiple ways.
Thank you. You can learn more about universal instructional design by going to cte.slu.edu and click on Teaching Enhancement. As mentioned earlier, that is where you will find the Universal Instructional Design Checklist as well as other resources. Thank you both, Karen Myers and Carol Beckel, for talking with me today about universal instructional design. This is Beth Hill from the Reinhardt Center for Teaching Excellence at St. Louis University. Thank you for listening.